Night Gang Podcast, episode 141. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim, Cajun Boy Elliot.
Hey, happy Friday.
And Graham Bubba Gump Thickens.
Hey, happy iPhone 4S morning to y'all.
And last but not least, Phil, it's Mardi Gras in my trousers, Wilson.
Good morning.
How are you, boys?
I'm good.
Good. Good, good, good. Well, I just thought I'd get something that was a little foot stomping this morning. So hopefully that fills the bid.
Let's just play this for 60 minutes. This is good.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway.
I might do better, you know, to further the, you know, the benefits of the world than just us talking.
Us talking, yeah. Yeah, that's no fun, though. We don't want to listen.
That's true.
So
that's
MEMA true. Summit this week.
What was it on?
It was on. Really? Yeah, really? And you were interview boy. You did a great job on.
Thank you very much.
You're just a machine when it comes to the interviewers. But that keynote owner, Avinash Kaushik from Google, wasn't that guy a hoot?
Great way to start the day.
Does his homework on.
A lot of fun. Yeah. I love the quote. My favorite quote is, every time you use Flash on a website, a puppy dies.
Puppy dies, yeah. Oh, man. Well, I was amazed. I mean, not only did he do local homework or homework on local retailers, but he just nailed them on their non-best practices. You know, General Mills, Betty Crocker with all he wants is a 60-cent coupon and they make him register and all that.
I love that. Stupid. Yeah. Stupid.
Oh, my gosh.
Saying that. This is stupid.
But I'm thinking about Best Buy's in you know, they got a sponsor table in the front. 3M was there. General Mills was there. And, you know, he nails Best Buy and he nails 3M for their 1948 website.
I was standing next to Joseph Reuter during that keynote for a little bit, and he looked over at me with his mouth wide open, like, "Whoa!"
Oh man, I was
but,
just.
But you know, you think about that, and you know, I hope that those companies wouldn't hold it against MEMA for the comments of Avinash, but at the same time, they need to hear those sorts of things, and somebody needs to be telling them those sorts of things.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, making somebody jump through that many hoops for a 60-cent coupon. You know, it's like, you know, you get enter to win a $5 coupon towards a Hyundai. You know, it's like, come on, really, stop making people work so hard for it.
I can't remember how bad he nailed Target, or did he? I mean,
no, he loved Target.
Yeah, but Target's the one that's been having all the problems. Of course, that's infrastructure, not usability.
Right.
But yeah, good God, is that company? And now the president or the head of Target.com has bailed.
Yep.
The news hits this morning. But of course, Target PR said it has nothing to do with the performance.
Of course not.
No. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. The guy's probably having a nervous breakdown or something, you know.
Poor guy. He also lauded the University of Minnesota and their site because it's all about who's visiting. And that was his whole point.
Yes.
Was it's all about you know, it's not about you as an organization. It's about the visitor. So what are you going to do for them? And with U of M, you can just make a selection. Well, okay, so what view do you want? Are you a parent? Are you a student? Are you, you know, whatever you are.
Sports fan. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
I wondered how our previous guest, Chris Leon, took that. I meant to ask him, but I don't know if he was in the keynote or not. But I like to think that he had something to do with that.
Yeah.
Having been employed by that fine institution for many years before he recently went to Capella.
Right. Well, and then Avinash talked about timelliott.us, that website.
Yeah. I'm sure. Oh, did he go after Tim?
Oh, man, he had all kinds of usability stuff.
Tim was a little busy, though. He didn't make it.
Yeah, I know.
Those doggone clients.
I wish I was there.
Yeah,
but, you know, I just want you guys to know that I drank all your drink allotment. None of you were at the reception, but I drank our complete allotment myself. So
nice job. Well,
we were well represented.
Was that your Volkswagen on the helicopter shot of
wrapped
the
around
drunk driver on 394?
Luckily I got out of there early when it started getting really crazy. I bailed about 8 o'clock and took a bunch of photos and got out of there. But my God, it was fun. It was like old home week.
Yeah.
Well, beyond the keynote, guys, what did you think the highlights were, and what was your overall view of BEMA? And we should point out that Andrew Eklund is going to be joining us a little bit later on the podcast, and Andrew always has great things to say about BEMA, right, or challenges for BEMA. So I'm anxious, yep, to hear what his thoughts were. But what did you guys think? What was the big? What did you think was a highlight?
Well, you know, there were some great sessions, and you know, the networking and the sponsors and the interactions, I think, were tremendous. I like the sessions I went. I chose some good ones, but you know, it's so hard to choose because there were 10 sessions in each
time slot. Yeah.
In which, you know, about 1,000 people, and I suppose roughly about 100 per room, then, if it works out equally, which it never does. But the session that our blogger friends Greg Swan and Eric Hansen did on working with influencers and identifying influencers, you know, more of a PR angle on that was quite good and quite well attended. And Chris Leon's session on Luther, what was it called? The Second Mobile Revolution.
Yep.
Was fascinating. He did an awesome job on that. There was another one on storytelling that was quite good. The lady from Atlanta, whose name is escaping me right now. So enjoyed the session.
Was that Stephanie Holland? Was that Stephanie Holland's?
She's from an outfit called Content Science in Atlanta, and I'm blanking on her name right now. But that was the last session of the day, and I passed along a lot of compliments to the team that ran that thing, because that is a lot of work to put on something like that. And these people are basically all volunteers that do this. So, good Lord, it was very well put on.
Well, I'll just, besides the hallway conversations, which are always the highlight for me of any event, the one surprise session was one called Privacy and Audience Creation for E-Commerce Companies. And so I went into one session, turns they'd flipped it around. And so this privacy one that was going to happen in the afternoon was actually in this particular time slot. And I thought, well, you know, I'll just sit through it, you know, and take notes and live blog on it. Well, the guy, Alan Chappell, is an attorney, and he came at it from a legal perspective and all the stuff that's going on, and kind of set the stage for what's happening with privacy. And what absolutely blew me away was, and I even asked a question about, you know, what about all the plugins that are using that Netscape API that allows these plugins in your Chrome or Safari or Firefox browser to be able to see everything going on in your browser, and in some cases even see the file system on your desktop, on your computer. And it was a real surprise, because it really made me stand back, and the audience obviously, stand back and say, oh, geez, you know, we're all hot for location-based this and that, and apps that phone home and things that track people and so on and so forth. And companies have to be very judicious and very careful and cautious about how they go after people and how they engage online. And I thought it was really enlightening. I was surprised how enlightening it was. So, because, you know, a lot of these sessions are all about, you know, how can we do things better? How can we market better? How can we push and attract and engage and persuade and, find the influencers? It's all about proactive sorts of things. And this was also about, well, yeah, you know, do that, but here are the guardrails, or here are the things that you should look at, because it's about 1,000-foot drop on the other side of that guardrail. So you just got to be careful.
Yeah. Yeah, the content was really excellent for this event, the sessions.
Yeah. So who's going to upgrade today?
Oh, God.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. We jumped past BEMA real quick. I just wanted to say that, like, I spent a lot of time, obviously, on the interview couch talking with folks. But I don't know. I've really found, it seemed like at the summit overall, there is a cognizant effort to make sure that people are looking to what the next thing is. Yeah. We talked a lot about some of the same stuff as far as social media and marketing and interactive marketing, obviously. But we're also there were a good amount of folks, that, at least that I talked to in interviews, that were, you know, keeping their eye on where it's going from here and the realizations of what can be done and what can't be done in the marketing arena. So to that, I thought it was, that's the vibe that I got. I don't know. Again, I didn't get to attend any of the sessions beyond the keynotes, but it was interesting. So now,
Yes,
Steve is going to upgrade to the iPhone 4S, right?
It's showing up today by UPS.
Cool. Wow, so you didn't have to wait in line all night.
I just decided, you know what? I'm not doing that.
Nah.
Yeah.
We're getting too old for that, man.
You see, what were you hanging at? You were hanging at the Uptown store yesterday, and that's when the folks from Fox 9 grabbed you?
No, they did the session. I actually went over, you know, because I'm in the Eden Prairie, and the Fox 9 station, KMSP, is maybe 5 minutes from my office. And so I just scooted over there in late afternoon, and he brought me in a conference room. We talked for 20 to 25 minutes for the 11 and a half seconds that I was on the spot. But it was fun.
I'm glad to hear you're getting your phone today. You pre-ordered on the first day.
In the morning. Yep.
Yep. I, for various reasons, couldn't that day. So I did it the next day, Saturday. And I was surprised to see it was going to be, what did they say, 1 to 2 weeks. And I thought, well,
yikes.
I'm not going to get it on October 14th, but maybe I'll get it 16th, 17th, somewhere like that. I go on this morning, Steve. They're telling me the 24th to the 31st.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable. Yeah. All because I just pre-ordered the next day.
It's just because you wanted that white one. I know.
No. I just ordered the basic black, you know. And, of course, that's the one they're running out of, you know, the 16 gig black. And, you know, all the carriers are already out of it for pre-orders from what I've read.
Yeah.
So, so disappointing, I'll tell you. The other thing,
scoot down to the Apple store and pick one up.
I'm not going to. Well, I'm betting they run out of them, especially the 16 gig black, really fast. You know, I went through that routine with the iPad 2, you recall, and waited an hour and a half, froze my rear end off at Uptown and got up 20 people from the front. And the guy comes out waving his arms. That's it. They're gone. So no, I'm not going to go stand in line at an Apple store today. I'll wait till mine arrives. I can live for another couple of weeks. But
let's see. Tweets this morning. Julio said there were about 60 people online in Roseville, about 120, according to Jake Nyberg, or was it Joseph Reuter? It might have been Joseph at Uptown. So there's a good bunch of lines out there.
Yeah, I'm sure Southdale has quite a line as well. But
So Steve, you went with the 64 gig. You went with the big dog, right?
Yeah. Well, I did because I had done the same thing with my iPad when I first bought that, and that maybe was a mistake because I never have used the 64 gig. But with this new iPhone, with a better camera, which is obviously going to take larger file size photos, and the 1080p video, which I'm sure that I'll use because I've been using video in this thing, and I've been, and the one I have now, the 32, and I've been dumping it off so I can continue to make room. And so I thought, I'm just going to step for the big dog just to make sure that I've got the space.
Cool. Well, and so, with the new iTunes Match thing, you're going to be, syncing all of your music.
Yeah, well, I don't do much of that. I listen to Pandora. So.
Say, speaking of Pandora, one of my old friends who was associate publisher at the Industry Standard back in the day, I got a LinkedIn request from her. She's head of sales or biz dev for Pandora. I thought that was cool. So, go Pandora.
Is that local here? Or is
No, San Francisco. Yeah. She's based. And, well, so is Westergren. Is that his name? Isn't he out there?
Tim Westergren,
From Minneapolis. But, and I had to remind her that, Pandora's got a Minneapolis legacy thing going there a little bit.
How funny.
Speaking of Apple and iPhones, how many of you have gone through the iOS 5 download? I went through it on my iPad yesterday. That was quite a process. Good Lord, that took a while.
Well, luckily, 9to5 Mac had a listing of all the files linked to Apple servers, and they posted all the links. And so here I was in iTunes looking at, you know, because I have an iPhone and 4 and an iPad, so I was going to update both of them, looking at 5 hours for the upgrade. And so then I downloaded the link. Each one took less than 20 minutes. And so now I have them on my computer. And so last night we upgraded all the iPhone 4s with that, and also the iPads. We have 2 iPads, my wife and I. And here's the punchline, though. The punchline is it still wouldn't authorize at the Apple Store. We had to actually restore the devices and then reload from a backup. It was weird.
That's the process I had to go through on the iPad. I couldn't believe how long it's taken. And let me tell you what happens then. When I'm done, I'm all done. I go, okay, I'm going to try this out on the iPad. I hit an app. It like blinks and doesn't open. And I'm going, oh, darn, did this not work?
Yeah.
And after a while, I went back and I tried several apps. None of them would open. And then after a while, I just went back and then suddenly they did. So I thought, well, that's weird. And then I updated the iPod Touch, and that went a lot faster than the iPad.
Well, that's what Julio talked about on Fox 9 was just the cluster that it was to do the updates, and it was pretty bad. But you know what? Hey, at least it's not like BlackBerry having.
We get to BlackBerry, how does iCloud work?
Haven't tried.
It's essentially just a way to triangulate stuff. So you can upload Pages documents and Numbers documents and Keynote decks. You can sync your contacts and calendar and all that, just like you did before. And there's a problem, though, doing the Mobile Me to iCloud migration. And you know, for any of us that live in the cloud, like we all do, you know, we're going to use a lot of different stuff, and I never used iDisk. I always use Dropbox, and I still do. And so, you know, we'll take advantage of other sorts of things, but it's really, really convenient. And it doesn't, I mean, you get 5 gigs of storage. It doesn't, you know, it's like it's unlikely that people are going to use all of that unless they've got a ton of music. But the cool thing I thought was being able to take photos and have those photos automatically show up on multiple devices.
Yeah.
So, I mean, imagine us live blogging and we take a photo with the iPhone. Now we have to tweet from the iPhone, but in the future we'll be able to have that sync automatically with our other devices and be able to use those. So, I mean, it's just stuff like that. It's kind of cool.
Hey, speaking of Dropbox, did you see Julio's tweet? Box one-ups Apple and Dropbox offers 50 gigs of free cloud storage.
Free.
Yeah, to iOS users. Yeah.
I was blown away.
Why would they do that? Why would they this just to iOS users?
Just to jump on
to suck up to us.
Oh, okay. Well, what's wrong with us measly Android guys?
Well, you guys are doing okay. Yeah, you saw Google.
You said measly. That's
you saw Google's earnings, right?
I mean, there's a pretty big Android community. I mean, they're selling 200 million roughly devices a quarter.
I would bet that Box, they're on a roll, and you know, with a new valuation and a new infusion of capital, they're like the latest rock stars. They'll be taking care of the Android folks too. I'll be willing to bet.
Say, I just had Andrew Eklund reach out to us, our guest today. And so why don't I go ahead and add Andrew?
Sure. That sounds good to me.
Should we do that? All right. Sure. Let's bring him on. Andrew Eklund, co-founder of Ciceron. And Andrew, are you on?
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. It's Steve, Phil, Tim, Graham.
How are you?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Big week in Minnesota, right?
Oh my gosh!
It's always a big week in Minnesota, baby.
That's right. Keep preaching it.
That's yeah. right. That's right.
We try.
Well, Andrew,
always a big week.
First, before we get started here, we want to make sure that you're not bashful about speaking your mind. For those that don't know Andrew, you are, I think you're just a hoot. I mean, I love listening to you when you talk and the perspective you have.
It says that on his resume, a hoot.
Yeah. A hoot. But it's not, but it's not that you intentionally try to be humorous, but I just find you delightful when you're talking about the realities of social marketing and interactive marketing and media and so on. So,
well, thank you. You know, I think I come from a long line of Lutheran ministers, and my dad didn't go into ministry and I didn't either. And I think there's a lot of guilt built up. So I feel like you got to speak the truth.
If you want to heal us on this podcast, feel free. Yes.
I'm not going to take any deification.
All right.
Andrew, there's a couple of things that we want to talk to you about today. You know, we want to talk to you a little bit about what's the latest with Cicerone. We also wanted to talk to you about this Tech Entrepreneurs Rally that you're a part of coming up on the 26th. But also, you've always been very outspoken and had some insight on the MEMA conference and the MEMA summit, and wanted to know what you thought of it overall.
Well, you know, once again, I just think it's just, amazing the numbers of people that show up for this conference. And I'm sure that anybody who comes in from out of town to speak, whether it's an Avinash or Chris Anderson, walks into the room and, they have a certain expectation of what Minneapolis or Minnesota might be. And I hope they leave thinking, a little bit maybe like they're a force to be reckoned with. There's just no question that this is one of the largest of these kind of conferences in the country. And as such, I think we have a responsibility for being as good as we can be. And I thought this year's conference was excellent. I think Avinash in the morning was brilliant. And the fact that he, took out his quiver of arrows and shot a bunch of sacred cows that some people here dare not speak about, I thought was brilliant. To go to my annual criticism, unfortunately, the people who make decisions about most of those brands that he skewered weren't in the room. The people who did the work are in the room, but the people who could actually make the decisive changes that were required to delight customers still are no longer there. But you know what? They're not anywhere. So it's not like MEMA's losing to somebody. It's just that there's a void to fill on that leadership front. And again, this is an annual gripe of mine, and I suppose it's still alive and well, but I thought Avinash was great. I thought Chris Anderson was a bit academic, but very interesting if you kept with him.
Chris is a very academic guy. I had a chance to spend about 15, 20 minutes with him in an interview, and very much like that, Andrew. It just, you could probably talk to him about almost any subject, but a very cerebral thinker. So
yeah.
Speaker. So
I never drink coffee past 11 o'clock, but I had a cup of coffee during lunch. So just to make sure I could keep it.
I didn't know that.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I thought the sessions were good. I mean, I thought there were, again, sessions were, from what I understand, were, hit or miss. I thought the one with our David Armato and Edward Roches was really fun and sort of spontaneous I unfortunately had a bunch of work to do in the afternoon, so I missed one of them. But I think we closed down Cicerone for the day, so everybody went. So I think I'm pretty sure we hit probably every session. And the feedback back at the office yesterday was it was a good conference. It was really all dependent upon which session you got into.
Well, so here's a question that just from your perspective, one of the things that a lot of us who try to see over the hill. We're trying to look strategically at what's coming next and how things fit together and who's doing what and so forth. And a lot of people will say, Minnesota is not flyover country. Would you guys please come here? Would you, would you take us to the next level? And people are looking for speakers and content that's more on the bleeding edge. And that's been one of the criticisms of a lot of events in the Twin Cities is the fact that a lot of times we're dragging people to catch them up with what's happening versus saying, you know, here's where things are right now, and this is where they're likely to go. And so mm-hmm. let's look forward rather than look back and look sideways. And so is that a frustration for you when you go to these events that you're constantly looking over the hill and trying to see what's next, and you're not really getting that fed?
You know what? Let me tell you an anecdotal story that I thought was really telling to me. It was probably 2-3 months ago, and I was asked to speak at the AdFed of New Mexico in Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is one of my favorite areas of the country. Just love it down there. And it was a noontime luncheon, and the guy who introduced me said, "This is Andrew Eklund from Cicerone. They're based in Minneapolis, which most of you know is probably the hottest hotbed of interactive in the country." Hmm. That was unscripted. It was in nothing that he and I had talked about. And I was delighted to hear that, because I so fundamentally believe that to be true. I don't want to necessarily diss on what happens on the coast, but I don't come back from the coasts completely inspired by what they're doing in terms of interactive marketing services. Now, technology is a whole different world, but, you know, in terms of marketing services and creative and all of this, I always come home to the Twin Cities feeling very, very good that my career is here, and oftentimes very happy that it's not elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
That's great.
That's one anecdote, and that's happened on other occasions as well.
Yep.
Well, I know people have always looked at the Midwest as a balance point, that, you know, we kind of take maybe some of the good from the East Coast and some of the good from the West Coast, mix it together, and take a little bit more of a pragmatic approach to some of the stuff that we do. And I still know that for a lot of people, and I'll put myself in that camp as well, is that a lot of the organizations with checkbooks that pay for this stuff, to your point of the leaders not being at MEMA or the people that did it, you know, it's more of the people who are implementing and, mm-hmm. and driving things forward. That's a frustration that I find, that the decision makers are more willing to wait to see who wins, as opposed to getting in the game and playing, because that's really the only way that you're going to really build an intuitive understanding of what the heck's going on and what moves you should make.
That dynamic is not unique, I think, to the Twin Cities, but I will say that without a doubt, that dynamic is holding us back. Again, I've said it many times before, the economic impact of events like the MEMA Summit should be instantaneous and big. If you could have the right people who hold the purse strings in those rooms, understanding not only that the world has changed, because they all know that by now, but that there's specifically, it's a budgetary and priority issue. You know, I'm writing a piece or a column or a blog now, excuse me, for, what am I, a journalist?
What is that all about?
For Twin Cities Business now. I think my first piece I ever wrote was, you know, allocation equals ambition, meaning you put your money where your personal ambition is. And if you're over-indexing way big on television, it's because you personally want to do television. It doesn't have anything to do with whether or not it's the right thing for the consumer. And, you know, I still think that is, a keen focus on what the consumer wants right now from brands is if we're not focused on that, we're going to continue to throw things against the wall and try and figure out why it's not working. And, you know, that's what digital is all about. Digital gives you the daily roadmap of what you need to do to satisfy people. And I don't know about you, but if I'm a CMO of a company, that's like a brilliant, brilliant asset to have, as a wind behind me. And I still see it as being people think of it as a black hole versus a roadmap. And, you know, Avinash was all about that. He says every single touch point is measured these days. And that is not a new idea. That's not a new concept. That is a 20-year-old concept.
So this is going to sound like a really weird question. I'm sorry for asking so many, Tim, Phil, Graham.
That's all right. It's what we've come to expect.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. But here's the question that I sit back and I look at so many initiatives, and Avinash really, this was at the heart of how he was nailing these organizations that for their non-best practices, was it's all about them and not about the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you go about helping your clients to shift their perspective to say, if you want to be successful in social media, if you want to be successful in interactive marketing, you have to view what you're doing and yourselves and your initiatives from the consumer's perspective, mm-hmm. and truly, you know, put those glasses on. How do you go about doing that, and how do you convince them to shift their thinking?
Well, personally, I feel that the agency world, the interactive world, has completely missed it on what social media is all about. Social media to me really doesn't have much to do at all in terms of the true intrinsic value about being a new channel for broadcast and even communication for that matter. I think once you start to, you know, articulate and have truthful conversations with, you know, leaders and executives that the social platform is simply a place where people can celebrate brands and or criticize brands. But we have to understand the critique isn't because, you know, when Apple launches the 4S or launches iOS 5 and the message boards flare up and they get angry at Siri and all this kind of stuff, it's not because they hate Apple. It's because they love Apple so much that they want them to be better, mm-hmm. and that they are, and they're passionate about it. And it's the same thing whether you're Apple or whether you're, you know, any brand here in the Twin Cities. It's the platform where individuals finally have power and they have the ability to celebrate, and they have the ability to essentially tell brands how they can be better. And once we change our mindset away from social media being placed on top of like a logo of a brand, and you switch it and you put it on top of that brand's audience, and that's where it firmly sits, and we have a responsibility as brands and as leaders to allow that channel to do what that channel is going to do, and then participate in a way that's going to be fruitful. And fruitful is everything from literally using it as a source of real-time customer intelligence about what I need to do next. And that's the other thing that we talk a lot with our clients about, is we need, whether you're developing, if you're, you know, tenant companies and making a street sweeper, or you are Capella University and hoping that a student persists through school, that we need to think like software, like the software industry, that every product that's in the market is just an iteration of its future self, meaning that we need to think of every product as you know, a street sweeper version 3.2.2, right? And then we listen and figure out how this product's actually being used, how it can be better, and then you got 3.2.3 or 4. And then that mentality really, I think, gets you into the speed sort of sequence that the software industry has always lived in. You know, it's constant patches and upgrades and all this sort of thing. And I understand it's a little bit harder to retool a manufacturing environment than it is a software environment, but I think the mentality helps so much. And that's where I think we miss it with the social web. I just think that, you know, there's too many stupid games out there. There's so many, we're couponing people to death. And it's just like, why don't we really just take a step back and realize that every single person on that network is connected to another 200 people?
Yeah,
that's some pretty easy math, right? If you can get 100,000 followers, it's 100,000 times 200. And when you start talking about that math, you start talking about 200 million people. Now we're talking TV numbers, and it's really funny how all of a sudden all the ears and eyes open again.
Yep.
Hey, Andrew, this is Graham. You mentioned at the reception the other night that you have a bunch of new clients. I'm curious to know how many of the new client relationships that you're forging are based on social media. Is that what the clients are looking for from Cicerone?
That's a good question. You know, it's a bit of a mix. You know, sometimes we've got a couple of new clients that understand that this whole idea that the social platform is really about brand advocacy, really about customer advocacy than it is, again, marketing channel, but they don't have their own house in order, right? They know that they're not quite extraordinary enough yet that people will actually talk about them. And so we're coming in and evaluating where they have oftentimes simple opportunities to go from, you know, ordinary to extraordinary. And then in other cases, we do have clients that just truly have remarkable products. And I know it sounds like I'm completely pimping this, but you know, our good friends over at Carlson Hotels are launching this very high-end new Radisson brand in North America, and it's starting in Chicago with the Radisson Blu Aqua Hotel. And I'm an architecture buff. It's an amazing architecture. It's a wonderful hotel that's going to complement the, you know, sort of the whole Millennium Park area, Grant Park area. And it's going to be an easy product to talk about, you know. Now, at the same time, anytime you open a hotel, it's like bringing a baby home from the hospital. You know, there's going to be bumps on the heads and there's going to be things in service. But again, once if we have the social channel there and people are coming in and, you know, leaving TripAdvisor reviews or Yelp reviews, and if they have complaints, you know, don't go to Yelp and TripAdvisor, go to the general manager. You know, how do you manage that kind of stuff? I mean, that's exciting to me, is when you have a product that's really extraordinary, it's just so much easier to sell. We all know that. Because if you can't sell it, then you have to advertise your way through it. We know how expensive that can be. So yeah, it's people are really looking at the next generation of the social web as realizing that it's not just about putting another fun game up on a Facebook page.
Yeah, it's more about talking and the conversation. But how do you scale that? I mean, do you find yourself getting more and more involved in the reach out kind of work? I mean, you know, it takes a lot of people to do that, doesn't it? I mean, what do you do?
Your math is right. I mean, you don't scale when you centralize it through a summer intern in the marketing department.
So, that's right.
You know, we're doing a lot more training, I would say, than we are speaking on our clients' behalf. Now, we might do that for a while, but we're eager for not only the marketing department, but, you know, again, if you're a hotel, you know, most complaints that people have in hotels have nothing to do with marketing. It has to do with housekeeping and operations. So if you don't have anybody in housekeeping and operations either listening or willing to jump in and participate and right a wrong or do a mea culpa and say, oh, you're right, sorry, we missed it on that, we'll send somebody up right away. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where it scales. It can't be in marketing. It has to be across the organization. So I think training and understanding when is the right time to speak up and when is the right time to shut our mouths is a really important organizational dynamic. Again, I don't think it has much to do with marketing. In fact, marketing is probably at the console measuring all of this and then keeping its big mouth shut.
There you go. Yeah. Good
point. Hey, Andrew, to sort of wrap this up, how does marketing change as millennials become more important?
Interesting you say that. You know, I was reading that, maybe you guys read it yesterday. I think it was in Business Week or the Wall Street Journal. By the way, here I have like a teenage daughter in the house and the phone is just ringing. Did you hear that? Mm-hmm. How's that even possible? Anyway. I totally lost my train of thought.
Millennials,
yes. I was reading about the Occupy movement and how it's largely made up of millennials. And the writer was pretty harsh, but you know, you're saying, you know, you've got a generation of people who grew up with their parents telling them they were totally awesome, that everybody got a blue ribbon and that they're entitled. And then all of this is happening right now. And yet at the same time, you know, you look at the data, Business Week had an amazing just flow and, you know, chart after chart of the growing, you know, huge disconnect between CEO pay and the lowest pay in the company, the fact that the middle class is just basically stagnant. And, you know, I think people are just sort of sick of it. And I think when it gets down to what's happening, and believe me, I'm a capitalist, you know, deep in, I believe the market can create much good, but we're in a really middle of a bad thing right now. And I just think that I think millennials, you know, also don't trust the people who lead them. And even after what you and I all talked about at the beginning of this chat, there's major reasons why they shouldn't believe in those leaders, you know, and they are way ahead in terms of they grew up with the social networks, for example. They grew up with digital, so this is all native to them. And they also fundamentally do not believe in advertising, or they do not believe that they need to believe in advertising. So while they might be entertained by it, they're certainly not going to buy as a result of seeing an ad. Whereas, you know, the guys on this call and, you know, we grew up, if you didn't have easy access to some person that could give you some word of mouth advice, you sort of went on a flyer and you said, well, I guess I'll give it a try. And if it works, it works. A millennial is never going to buy anything like that. You know, they're going to buy it because their friends told them that it's a cool thing to do.
You know, what's funny about that is last night, my son and daughter were watching Fox 9 News because there was a little iPhone Android thing that I was on and quick interview. But what was funny was during the newscast, they were doing exactly what they do with their friends, which is as they're listening, they're saying, oh, come on, are you serious? Did you really say that? I mean, mm-hmm. it's like they're having this ongoing dialogue and then they're tweeting about it.
Right.
You know, and they're engaged with their friend. Well, when their friends are over, so my daughter had moved home and she took over the entire lower level and she's got her big TV down there and she has her pals over and there's, you know, six or eight of them downstairs. And they're like yelling at the TV. It's just hysterical. And yeah. So they, yeah, to your point, they don't, I mean, again, this is anecdotal, but they just don't, it's like there's a cynicism about messaging that they are wise to, all of them.
You know, I guess I have said it, but I don't mean to say that advertising is dishonest, but advertising is inherently fractionally dishonest. Right. I mean, it's when you go in and you take a picture of an automobile and then you bring it over to the agency. Well, the agency is making it a little bit shorter, a little bit longer in Photoshop, a little bit sleeker. You know, it's a little bit shinier. You know, you think about models and airbrushing and all this kind of stuff. I mean, advertising has always been about selling something a little bit higher than reality. And when you get a gap that's so large where the reality is just too. It becomes unbelievable, then I think that cynicism plays a very healthy role in our society. Because hopefully out of the cynicism says, okay, what is reality?
Yep.
And with the social web, that's what it is. It's like if I hear about a resort someplace, I'm not going to see an ad for sandals on the television and then go and book a vacation to Jamaica, right? It's like I'm going to see it and then I'm going to say, okay, well, I'm going to go online. I'm going to go to do a Google search and now Google the way they do everything, but whole first page is probably all social reviews. And I can sit there and I can drink my coffee and I can read whether or not it sounds like a place I'd want to go. And whether the claims that were made in the commercials, you know, is it truly kid friendly? Or should I send the kids home with grandpa and grandma, which hopefully is the answer. You know, or do I, you know, what's the reality of the situation? And the only way you can find that out is from people who actually experienced it.
Yep.
And that we have that, you know, that's been around for a long time. But since 2006, 2007, it's become totally embedded in our economy in terms of how we take out our wallets and spend money.
Well, it's really fascinating because my wife and I are not cruisers on ships, but her cousin.
But you are on Hennepin or what?
No, bars. No. But, yeah, you're right. Exactly. cruise ships. But her cousin and husband are, and they've been all over the world. And so they convinced us to go to this Alaska Inside Passage cruise, my brother-in-law or cousin-in-law, I guess, said, "Hey, go to cruisecritic.com. It's been around forever, and go there, and you can read about the actual cruises. So not only past cruises on those lines and dates, but the future ones. So you can talk about things that are happening coming up." And I thought, okay, well, I went there. Even to this day, it is the most amazing community that I've ever seen anywhere. People post photos, they do reviews on offshore excursions and the whole thing. And I keep pointing to this as a model for people to say, if you want to see how to build a community that is focused on one thing, which is ship cruises, mm-hmm. It's the most amazing thing that I've ever seen. And it meets the needs because it's totally crowdsourced and there's a lot of advertising on it, of course, but, you know, when somebody posts something about a shore excursion, oh, by the way, then they embed photos and oh, by the way, they link to a video on YouTube that they shot and, you know, you see 10 of those and everybody's given a thumbs up to this offshore excursion. You say, yeah, that looks pretty good. I think I'll do that rather than. The offshore excursion company who's hired a high-end photographer to go out and take photos that, you know, happen once a year with this gorgeous sunset, right? So it always looks phenomenal.
Well, the thing I find funny, we're doing some work with the twins right now, and you look at Target Field, right? And I'll get my data a little bit off, but just suffice it to say that you've got 40,000 people in the stadium every single game, and 60% of them are on Facebook. And, you know, what, half now, I suppose, guys have a smartphone and will take a picture. You know, you're talking about 50,000 to 100,000 stories being told every single game. And you, and then you say to yourself, do I really need to go hire a videographer to go shoot, you know, 100,001 another video, right? And because the person that you're going to hire, by the way, to do that, to spend $5,000 on a video, or, you know, a few grand on a photo shoot, they already took 40 of those pictures because they're Twins fans, and they just took them for free with the same camera that you were going to pay them. So again, I go back to this idea of sort of curation and this idea of, you know, a place like Target Field. I mean, you have too much being created. I mean, the job of just trying to curate the best of that, you know, at least it's an amazing thing. I think that happens for everybody, whether it's a trade show or a baseball game or a visit at a resort. It's just that we're all, I mean, the HD capabilities of the iPhone or the Android, I mean, it's mind boggling.
Makes me think of my buddy Marty Weatherall at Fan Chatter. You know, Marty and what he was doing with photos at games like that. That was how they got started, yeah.
Well, that's why I listened to a talk, and I'm trying to remember who even did it now, but he said, imagine if the Kennedy assassination had occurred today.
Wow, yeah.
There'd be thousands of photos and videos from every conceivable angle and all of that, you know, so...
They would have caught those Cubans and mafia guys then.
Well, exactly. actually, it was aliens. But anyway, it came back in time.
We'll never know.
Through a warp.
We'll never know. What was it, Andrew? Before we let you go, tell us a little bit about this entrepreneurs rally that you're doing at COCO on the 26th.
Yeah, so it's, you know, Jeff Pesek and crew have put together this great series. I hope you guys have been catching it on Fridays. One comes out today on the Tech.Min TV series, and. Yeah. They came to us a while back, and Chuck Olson, who's just been a dear friend of mine for past decade or more, you know, asked us if we'd sponsor. And you know, one of the things that I've always been fascinated with is, you know, I haven't written a line of code since '97, and that was you know bracket P bracket N bracket P. I mean, that's the most I know about code. And, you know, so to me, it was just like this opportunity that there's so much great stuff happening at the startup level and at the technology level. And yet, I was racking my brain before we got on the call today to remember who told me this story. Graham, it could have been you. It could have been Kim Gerritsen. I don't remember years ago, but it was this great sort of metaphor about what's happening in this city, and that you've got sort of the school of IT at the university on one bank of the river, and then you got the Carlson School on the other bank of the river.
Yep, that was
and,
me.
Yeah, and that metaphor has always felt very strong to me because, you know, again, to go back to Apple, Apple is a great brand because they make extraordinary products, but Apple is a great brand. I mean, everything from the creative execution to the cloak of secrecy to the retail environments. And I'm just worried that, you know, there are a lot of guys and women who are cranking out amazing product, but they are, you know, these are left brain people, right? And you need to build great companies. You need to have people who can build brands around that. Yeah. And, right. And, you know, anyways, I just thought that was something that we might be able to help out with. And that was sort of the perspective that I thought we might be able to bring and support. Is, you know, when there's a company that's got a great product, you know, what can we maybe do to help them bring it to market or improve the user experience on it, or even just provide some counsel to them. And I just love to see more collaboration among the creative class that we have in the Twin Cities, which is undeniably one of the great ones, and the technology environment, which is an emerging one, that we need to come together on this. And I thought that this, you know, I think the stuff that Don has done with COCO and all of this is this idea that you can sort of mash people together that come from all those disciplines is really brilliant. And so, coming up, we're just going to talk about some topics like that and hopefully just keep the throwing kindling on it to help it keep going.
Right. Well, here's one thing to end with. Your videos that you used to do were incredibly insightful and delightful, and plus you came across in a way that you can't in your writing. And I would like to encourage you to start that again.
Okay, you're not the first.
All right.
That was fun. I have to tell you, I enjoyed them a lot more than I do writing, too. Plus, it lets the truly smart people, talk. You know, it was a blast. You know, I remember my first one was with Paul Douglas, and literally he was covered in sheetrock dust because he was literally in there hanging sheetrock in Weather Nation. And, guys like that, and Graham, you and I had a nice little chat out by Island Lake or whatever it is by the
The band shell. Yeah.
Shell. You know, and Mayor Ryback. It was right during the election. So it was how does technology play a role in democracy? So yeah, we've got to do it again. You know, yep. It's one of those things, all great ideas always come to an end because you have so much time to do other really crappy ideas.
Yeah. You got a lot of great brands that you're working with. So, I mean, you got to focus on them too.
Yeah. And it's the mothership. It does pay the bills.
It does.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, listen, Andrew, thanks very much for joining us today. It was really great to catch up with
you.
Thank you. I'm a big fan of this show. And you guys are like the only people that really stuck with podcasting. And I got to commend you for that.
Thanks.
Yeah. Us and Leo Laporte, right?
Yeah.
No, it's great. It's such a great medium. And, you know, I don't know. It just was one of those things that just, you know, zoomed and then it went away and separate the wheat from the chaff. And you're like the one grain of wheat left.
Thanks, man.
Nice to know we're wheat.
You have such a way with words, Andrew, man.
Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah.
All right. Take care, guys. Have a great weekend.
That was awesome. You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Always good to talk to Andrew. He's just
he's a great guy. To chat with. Yep.
I could listen to that guy all day.
I know. He's, and when you get him one-on-one, mm-hmm. I will tell you that the guy, he's really a funny man. He's got this positive, optimistic view, and okay, we can stop being fans about him. You know what I really think? No, I'm kidding. No, we love you, Andrew. Hey, we kind of didn't have time at the beginning, but we touched on the BlackBerry outage, but there's been all kinds of stuff going on, like the Google earnings thing that came out. Mm-hmm. I am just blown away. 190 million Android devices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a quarter.
That's unbelievable. That's absolutely unbelievable.
And there's still not a tablet market. It's an iPad market.
Well, but I'll tell you, yesterday
most of those are phones, I would imagine. You know,
they are. But yesterday I was at a Costco, and there was a Vizio tablet. They've got the 8-inch Vizio, and it was $234.
Wow.
The kicker is, and here's my frustration. This frustration goes with most retailers, because I know how hard it is, and I see this as a competitive differentiator for Apple with the Apple stores, because you go in there and guess what? The devices work, and you got people wiping the fingerprints off and all of that. And I go to Costco, and sometimes I even go to Best Buy, and you pick up a device and it doesn't work. The battery's worn out, or there's no flash memory in it because people steal it and so on. And so you can't touch it. You can't play with it. You can't try it out. And they always say, well, go ahead and buy it, take it home, because, you know, we have a 30-day return policy. It's like, no, that's solving the wrong problem. But when you see some of these price points, it's pretty interesting.
Well, and the Kindle Fire, too, is going to be a big thing for Christmas, for sure.
I don't think you can sell any Android tablet for any more than $200, because that Kindle Fire is sort of this completely... nailed that price point.
Yep. Yeah, but it doesn't have a camera in it. The Fire doesn't. So, I mean, there are people that have talked, like my sisters all say, well, yeah, we get a tablet. We have to make sure we get one with a camera in it, because they want to do Skype.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that a lot of people, when you really get down to it, you really don't use those things. So it's not a features sort of driven thing. I think it's if you have the price point and the experience good enough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is just the Amazon's first iteration. They're going to have a camera in a future device. So if you want that, they're going to supply it. But right now it's all about reading. And I think they've really nailed it. And we'll see next month, you know, when we get our hands on them, if they're as good as we think they're going to be.
Well, yep. One of the things that I know I've downloaded all sorts of, and you probably have too, Graham and Phil, that are video related apps. And I know in the show notes, we've got something about Hulu, and, you know, Hulu decided now they're not going to get somebody to buy Hulu. But here's what I'm finding as the shift, as we move toward more and more on-demand programming, is Comcast with their on-demand Infinity offerings. You can't fast forward through the commercials,
and the you can't in Hulu either.
Right, and that's where I was going with this. But it's the same thing with the tablet apps. You're locked in. You can't now. Fortunately, they shorten the commercials. But unfortunately, you can't scan through them, and they're the same doggone commercials over and over. So you watch like an hour-long program, and you have the same commercial run six times. It's like, well, at least change it up a little bit. I mean, come on. But do you think that this fall, or is it going to be a yet another year before we start to see some significant movement in the TV space?
Well, I hope that Apple kind of gets off their ass on Apple TV and gets apps out there. Because if they did that, I think that, you know, this whole Hulu thing would kind of go away, because every network would have their own app. You just go to the ABC network or the CBS, you know, app, or the NBC app or the Fox app, and you'd watch your shows. You wouldn't have to have an aggregator like Hulu.
Right.
And I think that's why Hulu took themselves off the market, is they thought that they were worth more than they really are. And, you know, in a couple of years, I see them kind of going away.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because the place of the aggregator, like a Hulu and quite frankly, like a Netflix, is marginalized when the studios or the content creators can actually do it themselves with their own apps and make all the money,
right,
as opposed to making some of the money through an aggregator like Hulu or Netflix. So I see both companies are in real deep trouble. Hulu more than Netflix, because they're so embedded with TV.
But wouldn't you think, though, that you know, if there are three major networks, four arguably, and then you've got all the cable networks and so on. So now I've got 15 apps on my device. How the hell am I going to find what to watch? I mean, who's gonna be
The TV
directory
guide,
service, the TV guide, and I know there's a lot of stuff out there, but if everybody's doing their own thing, and I mean, how are you going to even know what to watch?
Clicker, the Clicker app. They're the aggregator of the schedule, and I would imagine, I don't know how it works on the iPad, but I imagine that they would have ways to call to other apps to actually play the content.
Okay, all right, Clicker. I think I have that actually. Never used it.
Yeah, it's a good app. It's a good app for finding stuff.
Steve now has 40,000 apps on his iPhone alone.
Oh man, no kidding, no kidding.
Well, but what's interesting is you know, Roku just announced their $50 Roku box. So they've got a 50, a 60, a 70, a 100. You know, they've got like a whole bunch of different offerings.
Yep.
So it's sort of a no brainer to get into streaming, and there are, you know, we've got one, and there are hundreds of channels. It's like they've developed their own app infrastructure, and I can just see Apple TV becoming as valuable as a Roku if they added that. And I just don't see why they haven't.
Well, my wife bought a TV show through Amazon, and then was really disappointed and stunned that we couldn't watch it on our HD TV. And so one thing led to another, and I took the Roku box away from the exercise room TV and plugged it in upstairs, so we could actually log on and look at it, because they have an Amazon app.
Yep.
And to your point, why would you not go with a device that allowed, you know, that was the promise of Boxy, was that there'd be all of these apps that, you know, we could have a Minovate channel and create one that would deliver both audio and video. Mm-hmm. And you just publish it to Boxy, and then people could select it if they wanted to have that be on their main dashboard area. But I don't know what's happening with Boxy. They seem to be going away, and you know, if Apple does that and they allow apps to be loaded, you know, it could be a game changer.
Well, TV is the big shoe that hasn't dropped yet from Apple. And unfortunately, Steve Jobs passing, it was the one new frontier that he didn't quite conquer. But you got to think that they've got stuff up their sleeve over there. And we're going to be hearing about Apple and TV in the not too distant future.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised that it hasn't come out, you know, until now. So we'll see. And I'm sure they'll get there. It's just kind of disappointing. I was looking to add another box, and I'll probably add another Roku, just because there's so much more content available on that than there is on Apple TV. And if there were apps on Apple TV, I would certainly probably spend the extra money and get that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So anyway.
Wow. Well, hey, what events are coming up? Of course, the Tech Entrepreneurs Rally. When's that, Phil?
26th.
Yes. Okay.
Yep. A Wednesday. Yep.
Okay. And WordPress, Minneapolis, St. Paul. That's Thursday, the 27th.
Yeah, I'll have to go out for that one. I haven't been for several months now.
Yeah. Well, the group is getting increasingly dynamic in terms of the thread of discussions and all that.
Good bunch of folks.
Yep. November 3rd, MHTA Techni Awards. And then the Product Camp Minnesota is Saturday the 12th, and that workshop series that you'd mentioned Friday the 4th.
Yeah,
November 4th. I
need to check in with those guys and see how they're doing. That's going to be a pretty awesome event. Yeah.
Yep.
And I'm sure there's some things we're forgetting because we always tend. There's just so much going on; it's hard to keep up. But
that's good.
We try. Yeah.
That's absolutely fabulous.
Lots happening. That's happening. So yep. Busy week today, this week, and probably another one next week. So we'll get out and do our best to be part of it all, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, mix it up. Yeah.
Yep. Well, thanks for being on and for everyone for listening. And we will see you next week on the Minovate Gang Podcast. Right. Take care,
Have
guys.
A good one.
Bye. Bye-bye. Traveling band.
I started cold jacking.